Today, we're going to be talking about sharing, right? That's the title. And I thought the easiest way to share our witness is to share our testimony. So we're going to be talking about sharing our testimony. And our passage will be out of John chapter 1, verses 35 through 42. But before we get rolling, let's just go over the six goals that we had for the start of the year. Okay, the first one was to pray regularly. Two, to read daily. I'm going to go a little bit slower because I know David Ritzma, he gets going, and you're like trying to type them in your notes, right? And you're like, can't catch up, right? So read daily. Three, gather regularly. Four, give consistently. Five, serve the needs of others. And six, to share your witness. So those are our 40-day challenge. Those are our six goals for this start of the new year. And today we're going to be talking about sharing our witness, and in specific, sharing our testimony. So out of John chapter 1, verses 35 through 42, starts like this. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi, where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and saw where he was staying, and they spent the day with him, and it was about 4 in the afternoon. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who had heard John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah," and he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You'll be called Cephas." So the question is what is your testimony? Because your testimony is probably the single biggest tool that you have in sharing your witness. So what is your testimony? Well, the truth is, it's just a Christianese word for sharing your story. Sharing what Christ has done in your life. And I know that when we say words like testimony, sometimes people don't really understand what we're saying. I don't know if you know that. Sometimes people don't really understand Christians when they start talking. So it led me to think, what are some other times that we say something that someone who isn't involved in church, would they get it confused, right? So the first one I thought of was hedge of protection. Let's just imagine you're outside of church and someone said that they're going to pray a hedge of protection around you. The person outside the church is thinking, Jesus is the best gardener I've ever seen in my life, right there, right? Or what about, I'll pray about it? Someone outside the church is like, oh, that's a really nice person. They're going to pray about it. We all know that whenever someone tells you, especially like a parent or something, says they're going to pray about it, it really means they're saying no, but without saying no, right? I'll pray about it means no. Not happening, right? All right, so imagine you're outside of the church, you've never been to church before, and someone says that they're going to have a quiet time. Right? You're like, man, why do these people keep putting themselves in time out for Jesus? I don't know. Like, tell a kid it's quiet time, he's probably mad, right? Like, and this is probably the one I've told Jesse. This is like the one I've got to watch myself from saying, because people outside of church might think I'm crazy, but we say it a lot, which is love on people. We're just here to love on people. You're outside of church, you're thinking these people are weird, right? I don't know. And then the last one is sold out, right? That Christian sold out. Well, if you're outside of church, it pretty much means the opposite of what you're thinking, because you're like, oh, I used to love that band, but then they sold out, right? And they're like, we don't like them anymore because they sold out. And when you're a Christian, it means a good thing. They're sold out. It's good, right? So these are just Christianese terms. And testimony is really just a Christianese term for sharing simply what God has done in your life. It's not anything overly difficult. It's just what God has already done in your life. And that's sharing your testimony. So I thought of three goals that we should have when we share our testimony. Three goals that we should have in sharing our testimony. And the first is to be relational. Be relational. And this is out of Matthew chapter 9, verses 10 and 13. It says this, "While Jesus was having a dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with the tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners." If you look here, Jesus is being extremely relational, and he's using probably the best tool that you can ever have when sharing your faith, which is food. Right? Us Baptists, we like a good, meal. Right? So Jesus is using the best tool to create relationships here and to tell his message to people who normally wouldn't hear it by simply being relational and sharing food. And he's sharing people with people who normally wouldn't be seen hanging out with a religious guy, and they came because they were going to eat. Right? Being relational. Guys, when you share your testimony, and you're relational with a person. You don't cram the gospel down their throat, but instead you invite them into conversations. And that leads us to the next point. Questions start conversations. If you see here back in our original text, you see Jesus, and he turns around and sees Andrew and who we think is John, because John wrote the book. Turns and he looks at him, and he sees that they're following him, and he turns and asks them, "What do you want?" Right? What do you want? He turns and looks at these guys and says, "What do you want?" And these guys who are following Jesus, I guess they didn't think that he knew that they were there, they turn around and said, "Jesus, where are you staying?" Right? And then Jesus says, "Come and see." And then what happens? They end up spending all day with Jesus, talking about their faith, talking about Jesus, right? And what he's come to do. As questions start conversations. If the goal for you is to be relational when sharing your faith, when sharing your testimony, you have to start with questions. Don't you always hate that person who you go up and talk to and the whole time they're just talking about themselves? Right? Don't you? Everybody hates that person. You go up and you ask them, maybe you've done this before. Like, "How's your day going?" And you're expecting them to say, "Fine, have a good day." And they stop and have a 30-minute conversation with you about their day. Like, man, I did not see that one coming, right? But but the deal is if we go and we share our faith and we want to share our testimony, you have to be relational enough to elicit a response from them, to ask them a question, because you are going to be talking about yourself and what God has done in your life, but you have to be relational, and questions start conversations. The second thing is, it's got to know. I know this would be super weird. If you're going up and sharing your testimony with somebody you met at Walmart, that would be like, "Pastor said I'm supposed to share my testimony with people. How about you?" Like, that would be really weird, right? That would be. So the deal is you start with who you know. You start with who you know. And if you're looking here in the first, in our original text, this is the first written time that someone has shared a testimony as the result of Jesus Christ's ministry on this earth. Right? This is the first time. Because it just happened that Jesus was baptized and all this stuff, and he begins his earthly ministry. And the first thing that happens is these two guys come and talk to Jesus, right? Andrew and John. And as soon as they leave the presence of Jesus, what happens? Well, Andrew goes and does what? Immediately tells Peter, who's his brother, right? And convinces Peter to do what? To come see Jesus. Peter, you won't believe this. We found the Messiah. He told us all those great things. We spent all afternoon with him. Come hear this too. It's the first witness. You start with who you know. And I was thinking as I was preparing this sermon, I was like, you know what? The first person who I remember just absolutely sharing my faith with was my little brother. He's 8 years younger than me, but that was the first time that I really remember just sharing what God was doing in my life, right? And because he's my brother, he knew all the bad stuff. But, right, I started with who I knew. When you're getting used to sharing your testimony with people, you start with who you know. Start with who you know. And when we share a testimony, the truth is we may be tempted to try to make ourselves look better. I know that's the truth. I'm sitting in youth group, and our youth pastor asks somebody to give their testimony, or maybe we have a guest in that comes in, and they share this incredible testimony about how they've recovered from drugs and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, don't ask me to share my testimony, because I'm like, I'm just Jeff, right? I don't. See, we may be tempted to try to build up this testimony, right? But the truth is, when we share our testimony, we need to be authentic. We need to be authentic. We need to be real. And this is out of Acts chapter 26. If you want to learn about sharing your testimony, just read Acts chapter 26. Paul just lays out his testimony in Acts chapter 26, and it's awesome. This is a little portion from Paul talking about his testimony, really. And it says this: the Jewish people all know the way I have lived ever since I was a child, from the beginning of my life in my own country and also in Jerusalem. They have known me for a long time and can testify, if they are willing, that I was conformed to the strictest set of our religion, living as a Pharisee, and now it is because of my hope in what God has promised our ancestors that I am on trial today. See, here's what Paul, just real quickly, what Paul was saying is, look, this is the way I was. I was the Jew of all Jews. All the Jews know that I was the Jew of all Jews. I obeyed the strictest of laws, right? That was me, right? And now it's because of the hope, right, that I have, that what God promised our people, that I'm here today, which means he was saved. And now he's on trial. Paul was saying that this is me. This is really, really me. You know, a lot of the times when we think we need to beef up our testimony, it's because we think our testimony is too weak. We think, you know, no one wants to hear that I was a good kid, that I was raised in church, that my parents brought me to church all the time. One of my old pastors said that, you know, he had a drug problem. He got drugged to church every Sunday, right? You think people don't want to hear that. But you know, you don't need to make your story worse to make your story better. You don't need to make your story worse. You just simply need to tell your story. Praise God that you were raised in a great home. Praise God for that. You know, and the crazy thing is how many people in this world think that they're good enough to get into heaven anyways? Right? People all over this world will tell you, I can get into heaven just because I'm a good person. Well, you know what? You're a good person too, and you're here to tell them what? They can't do it. Right? I was good, and I still needed Jesus. That's your testimony. I was good, but I still needed Jesus because I wasn't good enough. Right? And other people will say, you know what? I'm afraid of what people will think. If they really hear my testimony, I'm afraid of what people will think. You know, here's the deal. If you've been through a lot of stuff in your life, chances are there's people who've been through the same thing. And they're not going to think any worse of you, but instead they're going to think that Christ did a great redemptive work in you. Because if they like you now, then they'll like you after you tell them the story, and especially if you tell them that it wasn't me doing any of this, it was Jesus Christ working in me. You don't have to lie. You don't have to tell people that I didn't, or you don't have to hide this part of your testimony if it happened. Because Christ did a redemptive work in you. And then the third reason that people are afraid to be authentic when they share their testimony is truly they're unsure of their salvation. Like, how am I supposed to tell people about my testimony if I'm not even sure that I'm saved? Like, I did that whole VBS thing or whatever, or I talked to the pastor after church or whatever, but I'm not sure that I'm saved. You've got doubts. You know, anytime I think about doubts, I'm quickly turned to a guy named Martin Luther. Martin Luther is the father of the Protestant church. He's the guy who started it all. And you know what? He is famous for being filled with so many doubts. And not doubts of that God is real, but doubts that he was really saved. And you know what? If we're just honest with ourselves, a lot of us have probably been through that struggle at some point. But Martin Luther, you know what he did? He used to beat himself in the midst of his doubts. Now, I'm not asking you to beat yourself. Don't. We're not talking about that here. But I want you to know that even the greatest had doubts. Even the greatest still had struggles. You don't have to doubt your salvation. You don't have to be filled with doubt because, you know what? Even the greatest, you don't have to be ashamed of that. Let me tell you something real quick as we just wrap up that little point is that you can never be bad enough that Christ wouldn't die for you. You can never be filled with enough doubt that Christ wouldn't die for you. And because he did, you can tell your story. And I would be, I guess it would be bad of me to come up here and do a lesson, a sermon about testimony if I didn't tell you who I was and tell you my story. I grew up in Hearst, Texas, right, until I was in the fifth grade. And I can remember going to church just a handful of times, right? Usually it was when I went with grandparents. That's just the truth. We never really went, right? And then my mom met a great guy named Tracy, and we moved to Kearns, Texas. That was a big culture shock, right? There was more people in my elementary school than there were in my entire town, right, when I moved to Kearns. Right, but something great happened when I was in Kearns, Texas. And now I wouldn't consider myself necessarily a bad kid. I kind of figured I was kind of a good kid, but you can ask my mom. She's here. She'll tell you. I was probably a turd. I don't know. But something great happened. This guy drove a church bus 15 minutes from a paved road to my house to pick up my sister. That's what happened. One of her friends said, hey, I've got this other friend who lives in Powell, which she was getting picked up way far away. And he was like, all right, I'll go pick her up too, right? And so my sister told me about that she went to First Baptist Church in Kearns and then that I should go the next week. And I was like, all right, that's cool. Everybody I know is going to be there because there's only, 12 people in my entire class or something, They're going to be there. Not really, there were 60 or something like that. I don't know. But anyways, I decided that I would go as well. And let me tell you, I have never felt so invited to a place. Just felt like I instantly just fit in. And that was something that I kind of really struggled with. Being a new guy in town and all this kind of stuff that these people had gone to school with each other since they were kindergarten and all that stuff. And they knew each other and it's because there's only 12 people, again. But I felt so invited when I got there. I just felt incredibly invited. And I started going to church every time the door was open. And the only reason I went every time the door was open is because George Edwards drove a church bus to my house to pick me up. 15 minutes from a paved road. We would do this probably hour and a half bus route. Every Sunday morning, every Wednesday night. And what the crazy thing was, is I was like the only youth who would go on a Sunday night. Right? Like I was like, all right, you guys church on Sunday night, I'll be there too. Right? So he would drive me, come pick me up in his Toyota Corolla on these dirt roads, right, to come pick me up. And I was going to church there for a few years, my seventh and eighth grade year. And then my freshman year, George was taking me home, and he just pulled over on the side of the road. I was like, I don't know what's about to happen. What do we have a flat? I don't know. But he just stopped and asked me. He goes, Jeff, you've been coming to church here for a long time. I've been coming to pick you up. But have you ever accepted Christ? I was like, yeah, right? Like I know who Jesus is. We're good, right? He's like, have you ever just really accepted Christ? I'm not asking if you know who Jesus is or whatever. Have you ever just said, you know what, Jesus, I'm a sinner. I need you to fix this. Like, have you ever accepted Christ before? And let me tell you, I never have. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, right? On the side of the road, this man who I would never associate with if it wasn't for Jesus Christ putting it into his heart to drive a church bus to come pick up this punk kid out in the middle of Powell, Texas. Like, I don't know why he did it, but he did, faithfully. And on the side of the road, I accepted Christ. And since then, I would like to tell you that everything is good, right? There was a flip, there was a switch that got flipped and on, and I was the greatest kid ever, right? But my mom will probably tell you that I was still a turd. Like, that's... But I felt like then that my life really had purpose. Like, I felt it at one point that I was just doing good to do good, right? So my mom wouldn't kick my tail, right? Or I was making good grades for that. But then at some point, my life then had purpose. My life had purpose. And when I was a junior in high school, that summer, a guy named David Reeves came, and he challenged me and asked me if I felt called to ministry. And I just began praying this crazy prayer that, God, don't send me to ministry because I don't want to end up like that guy. But I did, and I'm short and fat, and I lead the youth. Like, that's the same thing. But Jesus called me into ministry. And you know what's crazy is something that really always burdened my heart. My mom probably going to kick my tail for real now. But my parents never went to church. Never. Even when I was going to church every day and all this stuff, they came like twice that I can remember. Like once when I got baptized and second when I did my little senior service. Right? But then something crazy happened too. George Edwards drove to Powell, Texas and knocked on my parents' door and said, hey, we're starting a new class and you're going. And they went. And since then, I've probably missed church more than they have, right? See, God has done a great thing in my life. And I'm just always drawn to Psalms, right? And when David's saying, taste and see that the Lord is good, but blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. See, I feel like I was always caught up in this taste and see, and everything's good, but I never took a plunge and took refuge in him until that day when I did. But let me tell you something else. Is if you tell a story like that, but you're not invitational, you're doing Christ a disservice. Because the third thing is you must be invitational. And this is John chapter 9, verse 24 through 25. It says this, so they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner, he answered and said. Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know is that though I was blind, now I see. And see, we see here that give God the glory is a good thing, right? It starts off like, oh yeah, give God the glory. But then we read the rest of the sentence, and the Pharisees are calling Jesus a sinner, right? They had no idea. So we think it's a good thing, but it's really not. They're telling the man to give glory to God. Don't give glory to Jesus because this man is a sinner. And the man's reply is, I don't know if he's a sinner or not, but I can see. Guess what? That's not giving them an invitation. That's not telling them. So how can you be invitational? One, invite people to church. I hope that you're confident enough to know that if you bring someone to First Baptist Church, that they're going to hear the gospel, okay, and they're going to have a chance to respond. And the second thing is that you personally can invite them to hear the gospel. Well, what is the gospel? The gospel is easy. You've heard it all your life. God came to earth, right? And he died a death that was meant for you. Even though he lived a sinless life, he died a death that was meant for you, and he was buried, and he was raised on the third day, and now he's in heaven. Why? So that you can have salvation. That's the gospel. Be invitational. So as I close, I just want to ask you two things. Number one, what is your story? What has God done in your life? And then the second thing is who are you going to share it with?